Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is David O. Stewart, and he is out with a brand new book, George Washington, The Political Rise of America's Founding Father. It is available now wherever books are sold. Just a fantastic insight into George Washington. And David, I always get a kick out of this when a new book comes out about somebody for whom so many books have been written already. The angle that you took on this, the political rise of George Washington, I think people think politics for him started with the White House, but where did his political story begin?
He set out to become a politician after his military career in the French and Indian War really went bad. And he leaves the military service having fouled his nest. He's offended his superiors. He's not going to have a career there, and he knows it. And he sets out to reinvent himself, and he gets elected to the colonial legislature. He served 16 years in the Virginia legislature, longer than he was a soldier. And he learns how power works. He learns how you make coalitions, how you persuade people. And he watches and listens. He's not a guy who gives a lot of big speeches, but he pays attention to people and he listens very carefully. And he serves on the county court in his own home county, where it's responsible for building roads and collecting taxes, all the things that are hard to do. And again, he learns how you lead people. And when he shows up at the Continental Congress in 1774, he's a very different man from the one who messed up his military career, frankly. And he is someone who is prepared to lead and who other people recognize should be leading.
Did he have a certain self-awareness about his political falls or follies from his earlier life as he grew into an older man?
I infer that he did, but one of the qualities of Washington, it's not the most attractive quality, is that he didn't apologize a lot. And that's just, he was a proud man. But you can see the way he changed what he did. There's a wonderful letter he writes when he's first president to a good friend back in Virginia, and he asks him, "Please tell me what people are saying about the new government, particularly the things I'm doing badly. I need to know that, because either I need to change what I'm doing or I need to explain myself better." That strikes me as a real sign of self-awareness, a willingness to hear bad news as well as good news. And, you know, I think to be an effective leader, you've got to have that facility.
What do you think was his driving motivation to become a leader? Was it the idea of popularity? Was it an idea of a legacy? What do you think was his driving force?
There was a concept in the 18th century which was powerful for that whole generation. And the word they used, which rings hollow to us, is fame. But they didn't mean the sort of tinsel fame that, you know, was sort of a Kardashian thing that we think of today. Fame meant people knew who you were because you were worthy of being known. And Washington never minced words that he wanted to be respected by his peers. He wanted to be thought of as a serious, good man with integrity who did the right thing. And he said repeatedly, "The thing that is most important to me is my reputation." So that was what was most important to him. And it has to be said that he got involved in the Revolution because he believed in the ideals of it. The notion of self-government, the notion of liberty was very dear to him. He sacrificed a lot to pursue it, and he was serious about it.
The way you have this book divided, you have it into two parts. One is essentially his first 40-some years, and then after that, there were some minefields that he had to navigate. But when you set about looking at his first 43 years, do you sense, you talk about a political rise, but do you sense that there were a lot of stops and starts? This wasn't a gradual ascension?
My take on it is that he had this sort of blazing start and then ran right into the ditch. And then he spends several years, maybe 10, sort of clawing his way out very gradually, inch by inch. And then when Britain and the colonies get into this fight, it's about 1770. He's about 11 years into his reinvention. He really steps to the fore because he's very angry with Britain. He wants to take them on, confront them directly, be very aggressive, and he commands respect for that position, and that helps vault him forward. And he then cares a lot more about politics, frankly, at that point, because he can see that this is going to be just a huge confrontation that will define his life.
As a historian, you've written about several subjects, and obviously historians before and after you have written and will write, continue to write about George Washington. But as a historian, when you sit down to write these stories and you look for that particular hook to find something that nobody's covered before, what is your process as far as sensing it in your mind and then checking to see if anybody's done this, because you don't want to reinvent the wheel?
Well, you look for what interests you, to be honest. And there's a wonderful phrase I once heard Ron Chernow describe, which is, you write to the silence. What don't we know? What's not out there? What's not explained? And in Washington's case, there is very little attention to these years between his initial military service, which is usually covered very well, and when he becomes head of the army during the Revolution, which everybody loves to write about. And that period in between, what I might call the wilderness years, people tend to skip over. You know, they think it's boring. And I think that's exactly wrong. That's the time he's growing. That's the time he's figuring out how to be George Washington. And to me, that was the most fascinating time.
Was it an obvious choice for George Washington to be the leader of the army during the Revolution?
I have to be candid, and I am in the book, the first vote, his competition was weak. The army was being led in New England by a man who had never been in a battle, Artemus Ward, a fine gentleman, but no military experience. Washington's leading rival with military experience is a man named Charles Lee, who was a profoundly odd man. He went everywhere with a pack of dogs. He insulted people freely. He was just too peculiar. And he also was born in Britain, had raised in Britain, so he didn't feel quite American. So in many ways, Washington didn't have the toughest competition. He did face a serious rival for leadership of the army 3 years in, when Horatio Gates won that wonderful victory at Saratoga. Washington basically hasn't won anything for 2 years, and there is a move to replace Washington, and I cover that in the book. A very subtle political cabal is formed to try to move Washington out and move Gates in.
I'm chatting with David O. Stewart about his brand new book, George Washington, The Political Rise of America's Founding Father. It's available now wherever you buy your books. The good folks at Dutton put it out. It's part of the Penguin Random House family. David, something always intrigues me when people write books about politicians, about government figures, historical figures who lived, and you know, we're talking the late 18th century, and it's not like there's any video or audio recordings, and so is it tough to get a sense of a person? I mean, we can know about John F. Kennedy. We can see his mannerisms. Is it tough to get a sense of a person when you're just reading a cold transcript of a letter or a debate?
It is a challenge. It's easier with somebody like George Washington, who everybody wanted to notice and who noticed. Everybody noticed his mannerisms, everybody, and wrote them down and wrote in their diary or wrote in letters to friends. So he was a very much observed person. Now you have to sort through and be sure that they're telling the truth. And so you look for three or four people saying the same thing. And whereas a more obscure character, you may have no accounts of what, I mean, there are frankly characters, we're not quite sure what they look like. And that's very difficult.
Is there things that you find in the historical record that you look that were covered one way in the media at the time, or that the media to the extent it existed, or and you have to reconcile that with other sources?
The media doesn't. It was just press, print media at the time, of course.
Sure.
And so we have records of it, but it wasn't contentious. It wasn't argumentative until he becomes president. That's when we start getting partisan attacks back and forth. And you do find things and read things that seem plainly wrong, but they're also plainly opinions. You know, they had Federalist Papers and they had Republican Papers, and they argued against each other. So it's pretty easy to sort through who was saying what and why. So it's not a... and it is rarely true that they are sort of disclosing some investigative scoop. They report official news and they share their opinions. So it's not often you run into that. You do run into accounts that have come down to us about Washington's behavior, which are controversial between historians, and you end up having to weigh in on that. There's an episode when Washington supposedly made a move on his best friend's wife. Historians disagree about whether he really did it or not. So that's something you have to try to figure out, and the data is a little thin, but you don't really have a choice because it would reveal so much about his character.
In researching the historical records that you certainly had to do to write a book of this magnitude, are there certain documents and things that are only available to you to look at that you can't have physical copies of that are in libraries, or are we to the point now where all this stuff is available and you can pull it up on your laptop if you need to reference it as you're writing at home?
If you're doing George Washington, most of it is available on your laptop, sitting at home in your pajamas. There were a few things I had to write to research libraries, it's even gotten easier than it used to be, though, even 10 years ago, because many of the libraries will scan an obscure document and email it to you. You have to pay them for it, but so you end up with a copy of the document. So technology is a mixed bag in many ways, but it has made research a lot easier.
I know that you've written about other topics in the past. The Johnson impeachment, you had a fantastic book out, and I don't think a lot of people know about that. But as things come up in the media, we've had two impeachment trials now in the last few years. Is this a thing where you write something and all of a sudden, my God, it's more relevant than I ever thought it would be?
I never expected two impeachments back to back, or even another one in my lifetime. I wrote the Johnson book after the Clinton case. The experience we're having is the phenomenon of a unique president, a uniquely polarizing president, but also a long-term problem we have. You know, the Nixon and Clinton cases aren't that long ago. They're in my lifetime. That the presidency has become so powerful and Congress is not, has lost power, is less effective, and has few tools for controlling the president and doesn't use those tools well. So we end up with impeachments when really maybe we shouldn't.
Do you find that you know way too much about certain topics as you hear them talked about through politicians today, that they don't have a real grasp on history sometimes?
It's certainly true. I hear things that are not true said, and I've been known to shout at the TV screen a few times.
All right. This is just a fantastically engaging book for me. It's called George Washington, The Political Rise of America's Founding Father by David O. Stewart. It's available now everywhere. Go check it out. You will definitely learn lots of stuff from it. David, what a great book, and thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Thanks so much for your time.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Keep on running.